nominated.
Why are you doing this? This is outrageous.
This is a kangaroo court. That's what we have here.
This is wrong. Why are you doing this?
Well, because it's the U.S. Senate. It's 2025. Republicans are in charge. And yeah, kangaroo court. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. All right, coming up, the criminal White House is looking to carry out more crimes, more election crimes in this case, in advance of the 2026 midterm elections. And since Trump and most of his band of election criminals, by and large, were never held to account for their previous election crimes, for example, breaching voting systems in several states following the 2020 election, well, they're pulling from that very same playbook in advance of 2026. For example, the one of the crimes for which they were never held fully to account, one that we uncovered covered for several years here on this program, out of Coffee County, Georgia. And they're trying to use that playbook to try and game the voting system and our election rolls again, wherever they think they can get away with it. Details on that shortly. And that voice you heard was Desiree Doyen. She will have our latest Green News report.
Yes.
Hi, Des.
Hi.
Amid the summer of floods and what the Trump administration is frankly doing to make all of that much worse. But a few other alarming stories of various and occasionally related Trump corruption first. In a late-night session overnight, the GOP Senate approved a rescission package for the first time since 1999. Rescission means essentially clawing back previously appropriated funds that were adopted through the bipartisan budget appropriation process. So it's a pretty good scam for the Republicans here. They agree on a bipartisan basis with Democrats on budget appropriations. And then with a simple party line majority vote, they take money back later that they don't want to spend. So they agree on a bipartisan basis in order to avoid the filibuster. And then with a majority vote, they just take all that funding away. It is a scam that Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer suggests could someday, maybe, who knows when, take your time, Chuck, grind the Senate budget process to a complete halt and even shut down the government, which he should do, in my opinion, rather than play into their hands when it comes time to agree to appropriations next, since Republicans have shown themselves willing to just cut what they don't like later on when they can do it with a simple majority.
Yeah, why would you ever make any kind of agreement with Republicans? Obviously, they can no longer be trusted, if they ever could, and they will renege on any deal.
Overnight, then, with that in mind, in the middle of the night, Senate Republicans canceled some $900 billion in previously approved spending at the request of the White House, including $7.9 billion on foreign aid, cutting global funding for vaccines, for example. Why worry about that? I'm sure epidemics originating elsewhere would never reach our shores, right? Food for starving children, emergency care, etc. Also canceled in that $9 billion, and this one hits home directly. They are rescinding some $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, less than the tiniest drop in the bucket, frankly, when it comes to our $7 trillion annual federal budget. Nonetheless, a huge loss to national public radio and PBS television stations across the country, particularly in rural areas, where smaller local stations really rely on that funding to stay on the air at all, to broadcast not just news and programs of educational value, but to inform local citizenry of dangerous weather, natural disasters, boil water notices, school closures, and much more. Because helping to shut down those stations, I'm guessing, is making America great again, right? The Senate vote on that was 51-48 along party lines, with Senators Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, the only two Republican senators to defect, the rest telling both Big Bird and you to get lost, I guess. That, as of airtime, must get one more vote now, that bill, before it in the GOP-controlled House, where it is expected to pass before a Friday deadline and then head to the White House for a quick signature. As the White House has been all too eager to brag, other Republican administrations promised to shut down public broadcasting by cutting federal funding for it. But only Donald Trump is actually doing it with the help of a few hundred Republicans in Congress. By the way, now is a great time to consider donating to your favorite independent broadcaster, local station, radio network, TV station, etc. No, this is not a drill. But if it were, you soon might not hear about it at all on local public media outlets that are already warning they may be devastated by these cuts. This is an alarm, and it is sounding for real. What you do about it now, of course, is up to you. On Wednesday, pretty much out of the blue, as Trump is hoping to distract you from the fact that he's blocking the release of the Epstein files, purportedly detailing client lists and other information about the wealthy pedophile who died in prison on Trump's watch back in 2019, as Trump is almost certainly named in those files, given his years-long, very close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. On Wednesday, the Trump DOJ fired the longtime prosecutor leading the case against Jeffrey Epstein up until he died, and against his partner, Ghislaine Maxwell, another friend of Donald Trump's. That case was successful. She is currently serving 20 years in prison for her part in those sex crimes. Well, on Wednesday, career DOJ prosecutor Maureen Comey was fired from her job in the Southern District of New York, or SDNY. No reason was given for her termination, which apparently did not originate with the interim U.S. attorney now in charge of SDNY, where Comey is a longtime, highly respected prosecutor. Politico reports that the order to fire her came, in fact, from Maine Justice in D.C., which essentially at this point means the seemingly unlawful order came from the White House. Unlawful because Comey is not a political hire. She's a career staffer for whom cause would need to be shown before her removal. But laws mean nothing when there is no one at the Justice Department to enforce them, as is the case here, where the DOJ itself is the one violating the law just after Attorney General Pam Bondi fired the ethics official who might otherwise call out such unlawfulness. Earlier this year, the acting U.S. attorney and several other prosecutors at SDNY resigned in protest after the DOJ ordered the office to abandon the corruption prosecution of New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Leading that corrupt effort for the Justice Department was one of Donald Trump's top personal criminal defense attorneys, a guy by the name of Emil Bove, who Trump tapped as a top official at the DOJ. Stick a pin in Bove. Stick a lot of them, actually. But stick a pin in him for now, because we will circle back to him momentarily. But on Wednesday evening, prosecutors at SDNY, still shaken by all of that previous tumult, well, they rallied around Comey, who was most recently the lead prosecutor in the Sean P. Diddy Combs prosecution. They escorted her out of the building, her own colleagues doing so in a show of solidarity, with dozens of them banding together to support her, according to Politico. As David Kurtz summarizes the news today at TPM's Morning Memo, among the potential motives for the Trump administration to fire her, A, she's former FBI Director James Comey's daughter, B, she helped prosecute Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, C, all of the above. As Morning Memo noted earlier in the week, the right-wing backlash against Attorney General Bondi for helping Trump to spray cold water on the Epstein conspiracy hype machine makes her now arguably even more dangerous, because now she's trying to prove her MAGA bona fides. How much, or even if, that all came into play here with the firing of Maureen Comey, that remains unclear. But for any of you who are still gullible enough at this point to have any doubts about whether Republicans and the Trump administration despise the rule of law, well, this story should help quell all doubts. Then again, if you don't already know how corrupt they are, that likely means you don't want to know. You want to lie to yourself about it. So I don't know. This story may or may not make any difference to you and to your willingness to be gaslighted by an anti-rule of law president and the political party that supports that unceasing lawbreaking and undermining of our constitutional order. That guy I mentioned, Emil Bove, Trump's personal defense attorney, who he placed as a second in charge of the Defense Department, Justice Department, who headed up the effort to let New York Mayor Eric Adams off the hook for a years-long corruption scheme to accept gifts and do favors for Turkey, about which DOJ officials said they had a mountain of evidence. It resulted in several top prosecutors, including Republican appointees, resigning in protest rather than let Adams, who had buddied up to Trump, off the hook. That guy, he also headed up mass firings within the Justice Department, threats against officials who resist Trump's immigration agenda. That guy, Emil Bove, was also identified by a DOJ whistleblower recently on record, including email, text messages, and more, instructing prosecutors on immigration cases, including the Alien Enemies Act case, where the administration had unlawfully flown several hundred immigrants to a maximum security prison in El Salvador in violation of court orders, that prosecutors, he told them, would likely need to tell U.S. District Court judges to, well, F you, suggesting that they should just violate any judge's orders, which is exactly what subsequently happened at Bove's orders. That guy, Emil Bove, well, he has now been nominated by Trump for a lifetime position as a federal appeals court judge himself. And on Thursday, the Republican-led Senate Judiciary Committee, despite all of the on-the-record information from whistleblowers and others about Bove, well, looks like the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to allow him, has allowed him now to go on to a full vote on the Senate, despite earlier this week, more than 75 former federal and state judges, both conservative and liberal, urging the Senate Judiciary Committee to reject Bove's nomination. Nonetheless, as CNN reports, Senate Judiciary Committee Republicans voted on Thursday to advance the nomination of Bove, Trump's former personal attorney, to a federal judgeship over the loud protests of Democrats. The vote, in which all 12 Republican committee members voted to move Bove's nomination forward, occurred as New Jersey's Democratic Senator Cory Booker railed against Republican Committee Chair Chuck Grassley, and as every Democratic senator eventually walked out rather than vote. Said Grassley about the attacks against Bove, quote, "What we're witnessing has all the hallmarks of a political hit job for maximum media splash with minimum substance." Booker responded, quote, "Time and time again, there were allegations made against this nominee by independent people, by Republicans, by career professionals. And this committee is not listening to them or demanding answers," Booker charged. Here's a bit of what that sounded like on Thursday in the Senate Judiciary Committee as Booker, Hawaii's Mazie Hirono, California's Adam Schiff. Schiff attempted to push back against Grassley and his call for a vote on a lifetime judgeship for a man who told DOJ attorneys to ignore, to violate court orders.
We'll go to Bovee's nomination. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Chairman, point of personal privilege.
Mr. Chairman, point according to Rule 4 of the committee, we have the right to continue to debate this nomination.
No.
I'm invoking Rule 4 of the committee. We have the right to debate this nomination.
You're out of order.
I'm seconding Senator Booker's demand for a vote on his request to hear from the whistleblower.
Mr. Chairman, you should at least acknowledge my Rule 4 point of order.
You're out of order.
I don't understand this. What are you afraid of about even debating this?
I, by proxy,
putting things on the record, hearing from every senator, dear God, that's what our obligations are. This is absolutely insane. What is the rush? Sir, I am interrupting because you're interrupting a regular point of order. You are obligated to address a point of order according to the rules of this committee. You could overrule me by a Senate vote. You're violating your own rules. This is unjust. This is wrong. It is the further deterioration of this committee's integrity. With a person like this, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of hearing from Chris Coons? From hearing from one of my colleagues? From hearing from Adam Schiff? What is the fear here? This is unacceptable. This is wrong. It is wrong. And why? Why? What is the rush to take another half hour to listen to people? What is the rush? What are we afraid of, Mr. Chairman? What are we afraid of? With all appeals to past jurisdiction and past precedent, why are you doing this? This is outrageous.
This is a kangaroo court. That's what we have here, Mr. Chairman.
This is wrong. Why are you doing this? What is Donald Trump saying to you that are making you do something which is violating the decorum of this committee, the rules of this committee, the decency and the respect that we have each other to at least hear each other out?
So there you go. Shortly thereafter, as Grassley proceeded with the committee vote, nonetheless, Democrats walked out of the room and Bovee's nomination was approved for the full Senate. If he is ultimately confirmed by the full Senate, Bovee, a senior Justice Department official and former Trump criminal attorney, defense attorney, will hold a lifetime appointment to the bench for the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. So is it any wonder that Republicans are now desperate to hold on to that majority power, which you heard them abusing there in the U.S. Senate and holding on to it in the House? And to that end, it seems they are willing to further corrupt our actual elections to do so. Evidence of that for you, unfortunately, after a quick break. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Tell you what, we've had a lot of crimes of the century so far this century, haven't we?
Yes, sad to say.
Nonstop. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. On the first day of this month, Wyoming residents began facing some of the nation's harshest rules when registering to vote, and additional barriers may still be coming for them. As the excellent independent media outlet Bolts reports this week, Wyoming became the second state in the union to require that all would-be voters provide physical documentation of their citizenship in order to vote in any election. As Republicans step up their nationwide push for policies to bar non-citizens from voter rolls despite a lack of evidence that this is actually a meaningful problem. And an abundance of evidence, frankly, that this will disenfranchise far more legitimate citizen voters than it could possibly prevent non-citizens from voting. But because Donald Trump lost the election in 2020 with zero proof that non-citizen voting helped him to lose, zero evidence, in fact. Well, we all have to sort of pretend that non-citizen voting now is a problem, and of course, Republicans are all too happy to help him do that. Even if, as will no doubt be the case in places like Wyoming, it prevents their own Republican voters from being able to vote. As Bolts reports, opponents of Wyoming's change warn that it will trip up people who are eligible to vote. They've filed a federal lawsuit to block it, making the case that it imposes unconstitutional burdens because some citizens do not possess the required documents and now risk being rejected. The lawsuit filed by the Equality State Policy Center, a Wyoming-based group that promotes fair elections, argues, quote, while it has become politically fashionable to claim that the, quote, integrity of American elections is being undermined by the participation of non-citizens, this is simply not true, including in Wyoming. Instead, the group argues the new restrictions will exclude citizens from the electoral process. The reform in the state called House Bill 156 was adopted into law by the GOP-led legislature in March of this year. But apparently it's the brainchild of their Secretary of State, Chuck Gray, a Republican who became Wyoming's chief election official in 2022 after campaigning on accusations that the nation's elections are, quote, rigged, and amplifying Trump's false claim that the 2020 presidential race was stolen from him due to large numbers of non-citizens voting illegally. Evidence to support that claim be damned. Gray has billed Wyoming's proof of citizenship requirement, the first of its kind in the country, heralding himself as a champion of election integrity. But in fact, New Hampshire adopted a similar reform in 2024, with the voting process taking several hours for some who struggled to meet the new requirements in the state during local elections in March. Wyoming's constitution already prohibits voting for non-citizens, so if any of them did so, and nearly zero do anywhere in the country, why would they? Unless they didn't know that they weren't allowed to, and it would already be a crime punishable by the state. A recent investigation in its most populous county involving a joint probe by the local sheriff and ICE worked on this. Well, they found literally zero cases of non-citizen voting there in the 2024 election. Critics of the law stress that women will be disproportionately affected by these sorts of restrictions. They may have changed their names due to marriage, since they were issued documents like passports and real IDs and, yes, birth certificate. It turns out their married name is generally not on their birth certificates. Some voters in New Hampshire back in March experienced difficulties voting due to mismatches between their married name and their birth certificate. Of course, all of that may be a feature more than a bug, given that women tend to vote Democratic more than men.
That was my thinking.
So
that was the reason behind it, that they don't mind if women aren't able to vote.
So disenfranchise a few thousand women, you're more likely than not to help Republicans. So, hey, it's all good. Wyoming and New Hampshire's reforms mirror a law that Kansas adopted way back in 2011 to require proof of citizenship, but that law was struck down by a federal court in 2018. But in the interim, between passage and the time that it was found to be unlawful and unconstitutional, guess what? Kansas blocked roughly 30,000 U.S. citizens from registering to vote because they didn't have the proper paperwork that was required at the time to prove their citizenship. That, notes Bolts, is roughly equivalent to 3% of the total number of ballots cast in the Kansas governor's race that same year.
That's enough to tip a race.
Out of millions of votes cast over a nearly 20-year period, Kansas officials at the time were able to identify Just 39 non-citizens who registered to vote. Most of them did not even cast a ballot. They were accidentally registered. They never had any intention of voting. But they found 39 non-citizens on the rolls over a 20-year period. U.S. Circuit Court Judge Jerome Holmes, an appointee of President George W. Bush, wrote in his 2018 ruling that eventually struck down Kansas's disenfranchising law, quote, "We are left with this incredibly slight evidence that Kansas's interest in counting only the votes of eligible voters is under threat." Meanwhile, the judge added, the law, quote, "undisputedly has disenfranchised approximately 30,000 would-be Kansas voters." Gail Simons, a Wyoming Republican who advocates for making it easier to vote and runs the blog Civics 307, worries that her state is in for the same fate that befell Kansas some years ago. Quote, "You're saying that you're okay with some unknown number of people being disenfranchised for an unproven risk of people who are not eligible to get registered," she told Boats. "Where are your facts?" Well, that's a good question, Gail. Good job, but perhaps you're in the wrong party at this point, it seems to me. Since his election, Secretary of State Gray has gone toe-to-toe with county clerks in a thus far unsuccessful push to allow ballot drop boxes. In 2023, Gray also oversaw a large purge of voter rolls based on longstanding state procedures that allow a voter's registration to be canceled if they skip the most recent general election. The Secretary of State's office removed over 80,000 names in Wyoming. That was roughly 25% of the state's voting rolls.
Wow.
If anyone was purged by mistake in the bargain, well, they will now have to meet Wyoming's more restrictive requirements to register by coming up with proof of citizenship. Now, because this is the very red state of Wyoming, I suspect some of you lefties listening to this show today may or may not care if a bunch of Republicans in the state get disenfranchised thanks to Republican policies. But that said, A, you are wrong. When it comes to democracy, we fight for the right for every eligible citizen, period, to be able to cast a vote. And B, what happens in Wyoming does not stay in Wyoming. In fact, Republicans in Congress right now have been advancing their so-called SAVE Act, a federal bill that already passed the U.S. House in March. It would impose proof of citizenship laws nationwide if adopted by the Senate and then signed into law by Donald Trump, as he has demanded. So you want to fight for voting rights? Now is a good time to do that, even in states like Wyoming. That's how this works. We fight for everyone's right here to vote. In the meantime, Republican operatives in the shadows, not elected officials, even like Secretary of State Gray, the jerk in Wyoming, but perhaps operatives who appear to be working for the White House, well, they are still hard at work finding even shadier ways to undermine our nation's elections. The Denver Post reports today that a consultant claiming to work for the White House called several Republican county clerks in Colorado last week, seeking, quote, third-party access to secure voting equipment. At least 10 Republican clerks were contacted by this consultant named Jeff Small, election officials said on Wednesday. Small, who has Colorado political connections, told the clerks that he was working on the project for the White House and the U.S. Departments of Justice and Homeland Security. And he said that he wanted the clerks to let an outside party access their voting equipment to identify, quote, gaps. Okay, gaps. What does that mean? And by the way, no. Third parties are not allowed to receive access to sensitive voting systems willy-nilly like that because you called and said you come from the White House. Small also said that he was requesting access because President Trump's administration was frustrated with the slow rollout of a ridiculous executive order that was issued earlier this year. Trump's order sought greater federal control over elections, even though the U.S. Constitution grants that control to the states, not to federal authorities, except for very specific circumstances where Congress, not the executive, may exercise power over elections as specified by the Constitution. Which part of the Constitution do you not understand, Mr. Trump? Oh, all of them? All of it? Because you never read it? Got it. Last month, the federal court blocked a lot of that executive order from taking effect, at least for now, at least until Trump's corrupted right-wing activist Republican Supreme Court majority further corrupts our elections by imagining up some new provision in the Constitution that no one's ever seen before in order to allow the executive to seize control of our elections. But until then, well, happily, as the Denver Post reports, all of the clerks who were contacted by Small rejected the request from him that, according to election officials, unauthorized access to voting equipment is illegal under state law. And for some clerks, the request immediately prompted thoughts that it amounted to the type of conduct that resulted in Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters being sentenced to 9 years in prison after she unlawfully worked with other fellow Republicans in order to breach her own county's voting system after the 2020 election. Steve Schleicher, the clerk and recorder in El Paso County, told the Post, quote, "I'm sitting here going, there's a person spending 9 years in prison here in Colorado for doing the exact same thing." Small had connected Schleicher with a Trump Department of Homeland Security official who had sought access that Schleicher likened to hacking into voting equipment. Great. So now Homeland Security itself is talking to election officials and is hoping to hack into the nation's voting equipment. Justin Grantham, the clerk and recorder in Fremont County, said Small called him on July 9 and was, quote, "looking for Republican clerks in the Democratic states that would be willing to work with the White House and the Department of Justice for bringing a third party to evaluate the security of voting equipment." All of the clerks contacted use Dominion voting system voting machines. Dominion, as you know, has long been the target of extensive and repeatedly debunked claims that they interfered with the 2020 election and somehow stole it for Joe Biden from Trump after Trump so embarrassingly lost that year. Small also works for a right-wing public affairs firm in Denver named the 76 Group, and he previously was the chief of staff for Colorado's U.S. Congresswoman Lauren Boebert.
Really?
Yeah. In a statement to Denver Post, Small said Wednesday that he was approached by, quote, "officials working on the president's executive order to improve election security," and they asked him, quote, "to connect them with a few local county clerks to get their input on this important effort." But apparently only Republican ones. I guess their input came in the form of a big middle finger to Small and to the White House, at least as far as we know. Hopefully there are no other Tina Peters out there willingly corrupting elections on behalf of their cult leader. Small claimed that he was happy to help the White House and that this was a, quote, "volunteer connection effort that he did in his spare time." But he declined to answer any follow-up questions. The effort alarmed election officials, and in a letter sent to clerks last week, Matt Crane, the executive director of the Colorado County Clerks Association, said that no one had complied with the request. He noted that, quote, "inviting a third party to examine a Colorado voting machine is a violation of state law."
Hmm. He didn't answer any questions. It makes me wonder, if he was looking for Republican clerks in Democratic states, who else did he contact in other states? Or if somebody else has been doing
other
that
people
in other
doing
states.
The exact same thing, yeah. Right? I mean, what we know about Small, so before he worked for Boebert, he was appointed by Trump himself, I guess, to work in the Department of Interior. So I think back in his first term. So this is a former Trump official, in addition to being a congressional aide, the chief of staff to Lauren Boebert. He joined this 76 group, whatever that is, earlier this year, according to a report from Colorado Politics. Among those who refused to comment on this story to the Denver Post are Boebert's office, the head of the 76 group, a spokesperson for the DOJ, and a White House spokesperson who otherwise referred the post to Homeland Security, which responded with a comment from an unnamed spokesperson saying that the agency daily, quote, works with our local partners to make sure our elections remain safe. We don't disclose every single conversation we have with them. So, yeah, the threat to your elections and your democracy is, in fact, coming from inside the House. Not from non-citizens, not from foreigners, not from foreign countries. And in this case, it is apparently coming from inside the White House. The Washington Post, which originally broke this story on Wednesday, reports that Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, a Democrat, likened this effort to Trump's unsuccessful push to reverse the 2020 election, which ended with his supporters rioting at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. As you may recall, Griswold said this is the 2020 playbook on steroids. She said this is all part of a bigger ploy to further undermine our voting in this country. They are actively in a power grab. Pay attention to Secretary Griswold. She is correct. Because the day after that January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, down in Coffee County, Georgia, they breached voting systems down there in a scheme that sounds remarkably similar to the one I've just described to you in Colorado. I'll get to that in a second. But Crane, the head of the Colorado Clerks Association, said that clerks began calling him about the outreach from this guy, this consultant, Small, aptly named. Crane said Small told some clerks that he was working on behalf of Stephen Miller, Donald Trump's deputy chief of staff and the prominent booster of his false claims about election fraud in 2020. But the paper reports clerks have been, quote, resolute in refusing Small's request, according to Crane. Steve Schleicher, the clerk in El Paso, said that Small called him on July 9. They spoke briefly, and Small complimented El Paso County on its election integrity efforts. With Schleicher's permission, Small gave the clerk's phone number to an official from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. That's CISA, the agency at DHS, which is supposed to protect critical infrastructure like voting systems. That official then called, quote, looking for partners to test the election voting equipment to see if there's any gaps, according to Schleicher, who he said, quote, he said, I was like, oh, the federal government has no jurisdiction over local voting equipment, he said, and he told the official to call the Colorado Secretary of State's office or the U.S. Election Assistance Commission instead of calling him. He told the paper, quote, El Paso County is in a unique position because we're the most populous county in the state. We have the most active voters, just shy of 511,000 active voters. So the most in the state, and we're still considered pretty conservative, he said. And with this administration, it was likely a matter of, hey, let's reach out to the largest and most conservative county, which happens to be El Paso. But the thing is, no, not at all, he said.
Good for him.
Good for him indeed. Nonetheless, in a call on that very same day, the paper reports, Small then told Justin Graham, the clerk over in Fremont County, that, hey, El Paso County had agreed to provide access to equipment, said Grantham. But he knew that El Paso was not on board. But what he told me, he said, quote, was that they were on board. Like, if one goes, all should go, Grantham said. And he said he knew better. He said he suspected that the administration might have thought that other Republican clerks in Colorado shared Tina Peters' beliefs and would be willing to grant access to that voting equipment. Apparently, happily, that does not seem to be the case in Colorado, at least as far as we can tell, with all of these Republican election officials there telling the White House essentially to go pound sand. Said Crane, the head of the Clerks Association, quote, I'm not aware of anything in federal law that would give them the ability to do this. It doesn't matter if it's the greatest cyber ninjas or some guy in a basement or the federal government. If they don't have a legal reason to be near these systems, they are not getting near these systems. Good. At least in Colorado. That's Colorado. A state with a Democratic Secretary of State, a Democratic Attorney General, who are both very aggressive in policing criminal threats to the voting systems. And a state with a very recent history, of course, of a Republican election clerk unlawfully breaching those systems and sitting in jail today because of it, serving as an example to all of those other clerks. Do you suppose that corrupt, far-right MAGA Secretary of State up there in Wyoming, would you think he would be as protective of the state's voting systems if the White House came a-knocking? And yes, this is, of course, the exact same playbook that we saw in places like Coffee County, Georgia, which we spent years reporting on this program, trying to get the attention of, the nation and the corporate media and law enforcement officials to take action on it. This is the exact same thing. In that case, in Georgia, it was an Atlanta businessman by the name of Scott Hall, who was contacted by Trumpers and was able to get permission in that case from the corrupt county clerk in Coffee County to allow Trump's MAGA minions, including, if you forgot, former Trump attorney Sidney Powell and that cyber ninja guy Doug Logan, to spend days rifling through statewide Dominion voting systems in Coffee County, learning how they work. So if they want to game the system, they can apply it to the rest of the state, because the state stupidly uses the same voting system across the entire state. And yes, those same systems are used in about a dozen other states across the country, like Colorado. They breached those systems in Coffee County. They unlawfully made copies of proprietary voting and tally system software code and distributed it all over the country to Trumpers in advance of the 2024 election. Remember that? It is exactly what we are seeing this past week in Colorado, or at least an attempt at that same scheme. It was eventually undone when our friend Marilyn Marks, great election security champion from the Coalition for Good Governance, who had legitimately been challenging the use of Dominion's touchscreen voting systems in Georgia in court, not in secret. The scheme was up when she was contacted by that operative, that consultant, Scott Hall, who essentially confessed to the entire scheme on a phone call with Marilyn Marks that she had the peace of mind to begin recording at some point when she realized what was going on. We were the first in the nation, this program, broadcast, to air that clip back in 2022 with Marilyn Marks joining us on the show at the time. Here's a little bit of that clip just to remind you.
You know, I'm the guy that chartered the jet to go down to Coffee County to have them inspect all of those computers. And they scanned all the equipment, imaged all the hard drives.
They imaged the hard drives?
Yes.
How in the world did you get permission to do that?
We basically had the entire elections committee there. Okay. And they said, we give you permission. Go for it.
Same playbook. That's exactly what Scott Hall, but this guy Small was exactly what he was attempting to do in Colorado this past week. Now, Scott Hall and Sidney Powell, they both ended up pleading guilty in the broad conspiracy case that was filed by Atlanta prosecutors against Donald Trump and 19 others related to their collective attempts to steal the 2020 election in Georgia, with five of them being named as part of this Coffee County scheme. That case, in which Trump himself was charged with 13 criminal counts in the 41-count RICO case, that remains on hold right now in Georgia. But it looks like Team Trump doesn't care. They are still attempting to pull off the same schemes elsewhere if they think they can get away with it. Thankfully, it looks like it won't happen, at least not again, in Colorado. But we'll see. We'll find out where else this may be going on as well. And it is not the only scheme underway by this corrupt White House, as Washington Post reported on Wednesday when they also broke this story out of Colorado. They write, quote, "The Trump administration and its allies have launched a multi-pronged effort to gather data on voters and inspect voting equipment, sparking concerns among local and state election officials about federal interference ahead of the 2026 midterms." The Justice Department, the Post reports, has taken the unusual step of asking at least 9 states for copies of their voter rolls, and at least 2 have turned them over, at least parts of them, according to state officials. In addition, 2 DOJ lawyers have asked states to share information about voters to implement a Trump executive order that would shift some power over elections from the states to Washington. You know, that executive order that has been temporarily blocked, by and large, for now, by the lower courts, which includes provisions to change mail ballot deadlines and require voters to provide proof of citizenship. The DOJ attorneys have asked to talk about a different provision, which has not been halted by the courts, focused on sharing information. Election officials from both parties fear that the administration could try to build a national file that includes personal information about voters or impose rules that would boot eligible voters from the rolls and make it harder to cast ballots. More than 350 election officials from at least 33 states joined a conference call on Monday to learn more about all of this, about the potential implications of the administration's moves. Election officials have bristled at the notion of federal intrusion. In 2017, during Trump's first term, officials from both parties declined to give a presidential commission detailed information on voters, the Mississippi Republican Secretary of State at the time telling the task force to, quote, "go jump in the Gulf of Mexico." The administration's latest push for voting data, however, comes a year and a half before the midterms. Samantha Tarzi, the CEO of the nonprofit Voting Rights Lab, said, quote, "President Trump and his allies are trying to lay the groundwork to interfere with a free and fair election in 2026. The Justice Department outreach has differed from state to state, apparently, according to the agency letters and emails that were uncovered. In Colorado, in a separate scheme from the voting system scheme, DOJ made a sweeping request for, quote, "all records related to elections." In Alaska, it questioned why no voters had been removed from the rolls for mental incompetence. In several states, it asked detailed questions about the process to remove non-citizens and other ineligible voters from the rolls. So you see what they're getting at here. Inquiries went to both Republican and Democratic states alike: Alaska, Colorado, Florida, Minnesota, Nevada, New Hampshire, New York, Oklahoma, Wisconsin. Federal law, however, gives the Justice Department the ability to ensure states have procedures in place to remove ineligible voters and otherwise properly maintain their rolls, but it does not expressly give the agency the authority to review the voter rolls themselves, and all of this has election officials quite concerned. Ann Jacobs, chair of the Wisconsin Election Commission, said she worries the government could try to use the information to justify new rules that would make it harder to cast ballots. Well, of course they would. Why wouldn't they? She asked, is this a backdoor way to get access to the data that the statutes have said that they are not entitled to have? Why, yes, it is, Ms. Jacobs. Justin Levitt, a former official in the voting section at DOJ, a Loyola Law School professor who advised the Biden White House on voting and a guest on this program over the years, called the request for voter rolls, according to the Post, quote, "exceptionally unusual," and said they probably violate federal privacy law because the administration has not given a fuller public explanation for why it wanted them. He also worries about the security risk of the federal government housing sensitive data on 174 million registered voters in a single centralized system. He said it's one thing if a county's voter file gets hacked. It's a much bigger problem if the federal government is amassing a national voter file that gets hacked. So what is their game? I don't know exactly, but I suspect it ain't a good game, and it's probably an unlawful one, knowing this White House and knowing the criminal that runs it and those that have shown themselves willing to go to jail to carry out his criminal orders. We, of course, will remain on watch. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. If we don't have enough to worry about when it comes to elections, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Vehicles floated away down the highway on Route 22.
Summer of floods continues with deadly flash flooding in the Northeast.
We're seeing like a 70 to 75% uptick in heavy rain and flash flood events.
NASA analysis finds a dramatic increase in the severity of extreme weather events in the U.S. Plus, Trump Defense Department cuts off access to satellites used for hurricane forecasting.
All of that idiocy and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Yesterday, New York and New Jersey got slammed with thunderstorms and flash floods between 7 and 8 p.m. New York City experienced its second wettest hour on record. Rain also commuted over to New Jersey for a bit. In North Plainfield, a whole dumpster was spotted floating down the street. I gotta say, the new Cybertruck looks pretty cool.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I hadn't heard it called that before, but this really is turning out to be the summer of floods.
It sure does seem like it. This week, flash flooding and record rainfall across the Northeast grounded planes, inundated transportation and parts of the New York City subway, and killed 2 people in New Jersey. Several states have grappled with extreme deluges in the weeks since the historic floods killed more than 130 people in Texas. All were hit by record rainfall without a boost from a tropical storm. The Washington Post reports that, yes, there has been an abnormal amount of extreme rainfall across the U.S. this year, that this is a hyperactive season with more than twice as many floods as usual so far, based on National Weather Service data.
Well, we'll continue calling it the summer of floods until we start calling it the summer of wildfires.
Yeah, it's all fueled in part by unusually warm Atlantic Ocean waters. In 2024, flash flood emergencies were nearly 3 times the annual average over the last 20 years. But in 2025, more flood warnings have been issued by the National Weather Service than in any year since tracking began in 1986.
Good Lord.
Here's meteorologist Matthew Cappucci on Germany's DW News.
We're really souping up the atmosphere, and these high-end rainfall events are made more common. In fact, across the northeastern U.S., we're seeing like a 70 to 75% uptick in heavy rain and flash flood events during the summertime months, and that's something we do expect to see more of with climate change.
New data from NASA this week shows that extreme flooding events have been on the rise across the United States, part of a dramatic increase in the severity of extreme weather events overall over just the last 5 years. The analysis confirms that extreme events like heat waves, droughts, and floods are becoming more frequent, longer lasting, and more intense. Last year's tally of extreme weather disasters pastures was double the average between 2003 and 2020. They say climate change is the most likely driver of the trend.
So it's getting worse, not better, even though we've taken all that climate data off the National Weather Service websites?
Yes. Turns out, yes.
Huh. Weird.
Conspiracy theorists have attempted to falsely blame the extreme rainfall events on cloud seeding, but scientists say that cloud seeding cannot produce the amount of rainfall and energy that these recent storms have carried. But, you know, some folks will try to find any reason to avoid acknowledging climate science.
I said I was sorry.
So even with the data showing an increase in extreme weather disasters, the Trump Commerce Department has indefinitely suspended work at NOAA on a tool to help communities prepare for extreme rainfall. It would have projected how climate change could affect rainfall frequency and intensity in communities across the nation.
What a tool.
Experts said that halting that work will make the country more vulnerable to storms supercharged by climate change. It's also terrible timing that the Trump Defense Department has suddenly cut off access to three satellites key to forecasting storms, citing vague cybersecurity concerns. The Defense Department will still use those satellites, but it will no longer provide the weather data to scientists, researchers, and forecasters, including at the National Hurricane Center.
Why would they do that?
Nobody knows why. They only cited vague cybersecurity concerns, leaving those people without access to a crucial source of data about storms as peak hurricane season looms in the Atlantic. One of the satellites allowed hurricane forecasters to see the structure of storms, particularly useful at night. That's important because warming oceans have increased the frequency of storms rapidly intensifying into major hurricanes in the hours before landfall, which gives coastal communities less time to prepare.
God, these people are idiots. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Everyone is dumb indeed. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can always download it for free at bradblog.com. We stay in business thanks to those of you who hit a donate button while you're there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us remain on your public airwaves as long as we possibly can. We really do need your support now more than ever. Thank you. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Till we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, dumb world.